Don't mention the war.
What?
Just don't mention it. It's not funny.
Okay.
Women in the armed forces, don't mention them either.
Why?
They're not funny.
Well, what is funny?
Easily understood quips, the common experience, nothing that can offend.
Isn't going to war a common experience?
Not in the Sunday funnies.
You're not very funny.
Okay, so I am here with Mort Walker, who is best known for his comic strip Beetle Bailey, as well as High and Lois. I almost said High and Lewis. I was thinking Lewis and Clark, I suppose. Mort, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm getting a little bit worn out from doing drawings. I've been doing autographs all morning.
Wow.
At the Comic-Con here.
Yeah.
And I must have done over 100 of them.
Wow.
Everybody wants a different drawing, and they want signatures and stuff like that. It's great. It's just great meeting people, though.
Yeah. Is how many drawings do you typically do in one day? I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, this is perhaps a marked upstep in productivity here with all the fans.
No, actually, I only draw one day a week.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I can do all my dailies in the morning and then my Sunday page in the afternoon. And sometimes I draw while I'm watching golf on television.
Wow.
Double tasking, I think you call it. Multitasking.
Well, this makes me wonder exactly how you make and put out Beetle Bailey in conjunction with your sons. I know that I think you do penciling and they do the inking.
I do all the penciling, and my oldest boy, Greg, does the inking on it. Mm-hmm. And Brian and Greg help me with the writing.
Yeah.
The writing is the biggest thing. I write all week long. And then I take the best ideas that I've thought up and sketch out those. Then we have a conference once a month where they reject most of them. And
oh, so your sons are kind of the filtering team for the gags.
Well, we all get together and we filter each other. They all do gags too. Uh-huh. So we probably have, when we get together every month, we probably have 130, 40 gags. Yeah. We look through and we read them and grade them, and then we discuss them and try to come up with the best product we can. But over the years, what I do after we get them all together, the ones that we've approved of, then I disapprove of the rest of them, decide which ones I want to use. So all together we figured about 50,000 gags that we haven't used in storage in our over the garage.
Oh, interesting. I'm curious if the syndicate still rejects strips or if you pretty much can do.
They only reject them if they're dirty or too political or something like that. But oftentimes I don't even know that they're too dirty. You know, like I had one, for instance, a killer got this magazine. And he said, had this new girlfriend. She's kind of tall. The center spread takes up four lengths, and he got it out there. They wouldn't let me do that because I talked about center spreads, you know, which
really,
of course, is Playboy magazine, and the girls are nude or something like that. So, you know, you never know what you're going to run into with the syndicate. They will veto anything that is just a little bit too edgy. Everything that they love in Sweden, they reject over here.
That's very interesting. So another cartoonist was telling me this yesterday. But I'm curious about this because, I mean, to me, a center spread or a center fold is really a commonplace thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that, you know, we're in the 21st century now, that they would be able to have a little bit more latitude about what is considered safe or edgy or whatnot.
I think they're aware that probably a lot of kids read it, and they have to make sure that the parents don't complain about it, things like that. But you know, a funny thing is, I send all my rejected strips over to Sweden, and they publish them in big books and sometimes in the front page of the newspapers.
Wow! How many would you say are rejected and sent over to Sweden?
There's probably about two or three a week, maybe.
Huh.
Of course, you know, you get a couple of guys together. They're bound to write some stuff they know is not going to be published.
Yeah.
So when we have it all sketched up, they use the sketches in Sweden.
I'll return to this subject later, but I do want to talk about some of the really interesting things I discovered in this book. You're collected the 1950 to 1952. Checker has this book which has the early days of Beetle Bailey, and this was very interesting to me for a number of reasons. One, it was news to see Beetle, not a soldier, a college student, who has a slightly genteel quality and a kind of using people like freshmen and the like, versus the slacker that most people reading the comics know. And I'm curious about how this transformation took place. I know that it was a situation where the syndicate said, well, you were only published in 25 newspapers and you needed to expand to 100 to make the strip profitable. But I'm curious as to, did they give you a time window, shape up the strip, make it popular so we can sell it into newspapers by a certain time? What was the situation
here? I wasn't even aware that they were about to cancel the strip because it wasn't selling well. I wasn't even aware of that. The only thing I was aware of is that somehow the college theme was not going over because so few people went to the college back in those days. They said about 5% of the kids went to college.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a common experience. So we realized then that we were running into trouble. And several people suggested I put him in the Army. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to do an Army strip because after the war, World War II that I was in, all the cartoon strips disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, Willie and Joe and, you know, the other ones, Sad Sack and so forth. They all, you know, nobody wanted to read about the war anymore. So I thought, well, when the Korean War is over, or the Vietnam War, whatever it was going on at that time, I'd be out of work.
Yeah.
So I was very leery of doing it. But finally I said, okay, you know. But then I was worried that I might not have a strip after a while or I might have to change it. So I took him home and introduced his sister, Lois, and her husband, Hi, and their kids.
Yeah.
And so thinking, I'll have something else going on the strip. So
when, backup, basically.
Backup. So when they reject him as a soldier, he can come home and he has a ready-made family. So then that got to be so popular, I made another strip out of it.
Yeah. Wow. But, I mean, I'm curious, did the syndicate say to you, hey, Mort, if you don't get this shaped up in 6 months, we're going to go ahead and cancel? I mean, you alluded that you kind of didn't know that this was going on.
No, they didn't ever threaten me or anything like that.
No.
They just were working with me. We were trying to make it successful. And, you know, at first they resisted it, putting him into the Army, too. But, you know, good sense prevailed somehow.
I wanted to, speaking of Hi and Lois, the look of Buzz with the curly hair reminded me very much of Lois, actually. It had that kind of curly sweep. And the other thing I was struck by in these early strips was the way that you have these portrait-like figures of, including Buzz's roommate and a number of women who are passing by that you draw very realistically. I'm curious as to the look of women that were in these early days and why this attention to more
verisimilitude. Well, it's hard to draw a pretty girl in cartoon form, you know.
Yeah.
They're not so very pretty if you give them a big nose like Beetle has or, you know, skinny neck or anything like that. So I realized the girls, to be attractive, had to look attractive, you know.
Yeah.
So I started drawing pretty realistic girls. And
yeah.
I still have some girls in there that are cartoony, but they're not the eye catchers.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, I mean, also the attention to the background here is much different from what we see in the current Beetle Bailey. I was looking at this saying, look at all these shadings and this cross hatcheting, and even the attention to light in many cases of where light is coming from.
Back then, the newspapers gave you so much room, you had to fill it up with, you know, background and beautiful drawings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they run them so small these days, if you put that into them, nobody's going to be able to see the characters. So
yeah.
I had to simplify it.
Huh.
And it's worked out well.
Well, when did you really start simplifying things for this? I mean,
it was very gradual.
Yeah.
As the newspapers began giving us less room, I used to run Beetle in 5 columns. That's a lot, you
yeah.
know. I probably have 2 columns now, pretty much.
But if Beetle has been such a long-running strip, you would think that you would be in the position to say, hey, this is Beetle Bailey. We can have, like, even some sort of compromise between
you don't
three
tell
and a half
that months. To newspaper editors or they'll turn around and say so long. You know,
I know Berkeley Breathed, when he brought back Opus, he tried to argue for larger space, and initially he got it, but then unfortunately he was shrunken down as well. I mean, is this kind of the inevitable problem currently with newspaper comics?
Well, there are 2 cartoonists that did that, the guy that did Burke Breathed and
yeah.
the guy that did Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, Bill Watson.
They both insisted that they have all this space.
Yeah.
Well, they're both out of work now. Well, no, I
no,
guess
Opus is still going, but he lost his space.
He came back.
Yeah. But initially it ran the way that he wanted to, and then apparently he had to cave in. But I think it's all, I mean, newspapers having problems right now, and I'm wondering if you think about this in light of Beetle Bailey as to kind of keeping things a particular tone or playing it safe or taking more
what
risks.
What I try to do is make it appeal to the greatest number of readers. I don't want to do anything, you know, like Gary Trudeau does, you know, in Doonesbury. Starting to talk about very sophisticated things and using sophisticated language the kids can understand. I try to make mine very understandable to everybody. I try to use funny pictures. I try to have open spaces so that it's inviting to read. I don't have any dialogue that comes more than two or three lines down because nobody's going to read it. So I try to win the greatest number of readers I can. And I think that's worked out because I read something the other day. They were talking about newspapers cutting down on everything, but they usually, several times I saw the reference, you have to have the old standards. Beetle, I and Lois, Hagar, and Blondie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'm glad to be included in the standards.
Yeah. Well, Sarge's girth is not as pronounced in these early strips, and I wanted to ask how he... Did he just eat a lot of hamburgers over the years, or milkshakes, or what? What happened here? I also, in fact, it's really fascinating to me because he has two teeth in the early strips and somehow gained all this weight. So from a mastication standpoint, I have a feeling that he had some really amazing way of gaining all this weight.
Well, all the characters developed over the years until they became what they are today. You know, just gradually, Sarge was funnier to be fatter, and so he became fatter, of course, and... Well, Beetle was real skinny in the beginning. When I put him in the Army, I couldn't show the uniform, the pockets and things that have to be in the uniform. So Beetle had to be have more ample space in his...
Yeah. But Plato is the carryover, incidentally, because he's in these early strips and he's mm-hmm. also in the current strips. And the thing that's interesting about Plato is that we never actually see his eyes like Beetle. He's right. covered by those glasses. And I'm wondering if maybe this was one of the key factors that led to the success, the idea of covering eyesight and all that.
Well, you still see Plato's eyes. He has a flock of hair in front of his eyes, but you still see his eyes. Plato is based on Dick Brown, who drew High and Lois.
Yeah.
He was a very intellectual guy. He was heavy set and everything like that. Had a big shock of black hair over his forehead. So I like to base all my characters on real people. That makes them easier to keep them in character. Makes them more realistic and appealing, I think.
Was Sarge based off of the sergeant that you had?
I had a sergeant when I was... in the Army in St. Louis. His name is Octavian Savoux. And he was a great big hulk of a guy. And he used to yell and scream at us and make us work hard and everything like that, threaten us. And one day we came back from a particular grueling day, and there in our pillows was a mimeographed poem to my boys from Sergeant Savoux about how much he liked us and tried to work with us and everything. And you thought, boy, this guy's got a heart, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, so that's Sergeant Snorkel. He's tough on the outside, soft on the inside, and very human.
I'm curious, are there any characters, I mean, there's a considerable number of characters in the Beetle Bailey universe. Are there any that aren't based off of real people, or do you need a real person for each particular archetype?
I think almost everybody in the strip is based on a real person. Even General Halftrack is based on a colonel that I had when I was overseas. He was very ancient, he had white hair. We got along fine with him, but boy, he tried to boss us around and make us toe the line and everything like that. But he himself was didn't toe the line at all.
Yeah. Well, then you would be Beetle then?
No, actually, I am in a way, but I had a buddy in high school and college. His name was David Hornaday, from St. Joseph, Missouri. And he was the biggest, laziest guy I ever saw in my life. He's long and lanky, but lovable, you know?
Yes.
And, just as an example, one day I went by to pick him up to play golf. We had a golf team in high school. And his mother said, well, Dave's still in bed. And I said, but we got a tee-off time at 9 o'clock. She said, well, go wake him up. So I went up there, And he was in bed, and I started shaking him. I said, Dave, get up. Get up. We got a tee off time. He just grabbed his pillow, turned his back to me, and went on sleeping. I took the bed. I turned it upside down. He fell out on the floor, grabbed his pillow, brought it back into his head, went on sleeping. Yeah. And I said, boy, Dave, you ought to be on a comic strip. You know.
Well, I'm curious, because the early Beatle has these curious perpendicular limbs where he's going like this most of the time, and he's very square based, and I'm curious how this came about. I mean, he's gradually become more elliptical over the years, but
I think it's just a gradual refinement of the drawing. But I was going to go back to, you said I was Beetle Bailey. I am actually Lieutenant Fuzz.
Oh, okay.
The pain in the neck young lieutenant. That's what I was. Mm-hmm. You know, after I graduated from officers training school, I thought the world sun set on me and rose on me.
Yeah.
I was an officer. And I remember my first assignment was when I went into this office in this infantry company, and the place was a mess, and the old time sergeant was sitting over there, hardly even recognized me. And I said, Sarge, let's get this place cleaned up. This place is a mess. He said, oh, knock it off, Lieutenant.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute. He didn't salute. He didn't call me sir.
Yeah. I'm also curious about Lieutenant Jack Flapp, who was the first African-American character. It was in 1970 you introduced him. And this came 2 years after Schultz introduced Franklin for Peanuts. And I'm curious if you were thinking of what Schultz had done to open up the doors to make a kind of...
No.
I mean, your universe has a number of ethnic characters in this, and well, I've got
guys from Greece and Italy and Germany and Scandinavia. Miss Buxley's from Scandinavia. So it's an all ethnic group of people I have. I went to a party in New York one time, and there were some black people there, and they were anxious to see me. So finally they got me in a corner, and they said... There was about four blacks, and they were editors of Ebony magazine, mm-hmm. and they got after me. And they said, "You've got a dishonest army." I said, "Why? You don't have any blacks in it. You go to the real army, and it's got a lot of blacks in it." I said, "Yeah, but you know, I have trouble doing that. People might object to it." They said, "Well, you got to do it. You've got to do it." So I went to the syndicate, and I said, "I guess I have to put some blacks in the army," and they said, "I don't think you ought to." They said, you've got one of the biggest strips in the business. You're going to jeopardize it. And I said, but I got to do it.
Yeah.
They took me to the 21 Club, bought me a couple of martinis, and tried to calm me down. And finally, after a while, they said, oh, to hell with it. Go ahead and do it if you want to do it, you know.
And then you proceeded to get in trouble with a few Southern newspapers.
Yeah, but what I did, right in the middle of the night, at first I thought, well, I have a black private like Beetle. I said, well, then he's always going to be in trouble. I might get in trouble with that. Then I thought, well, what do I do with him? I can't make him dumb. I can't make him lazy. What am I going to do with him? You know, it's got to be sort of a positive character if I'm going to keep away from trouble. Right in the middle of the night, I thought of this character, a lieutenant, with a real strong and proud to be black and everything like that. So I thought of six gags in bed, and I made a code number for each one of them so that I could remember when I woke up in the morning.
Code numbers.
The first thing I did is when I woke up in the morning, I did all week's work of the black character arriving, and that's how he started out. And he started out by coming. Sarge, first of all, was sitting at his desk, and he's saying, oh, I got so much work to do around here. I need help. Next panel, Lieutenant Flapp walks in and he says, how come there are no blacks in this honky outfit? And Sarge says, help! It was a real, you know, shocking start.
Yeah.
Years later, I had a meeting with Colin Powell in New York, mm-hmm. and I got in his office and he said, I love Lieutenant Flapp. He said, I remember the first day he arrived. He came in and said, how come there are no blacks in this honky outfit? I said, boy, you're a real fan. Thank you. You know, so we stayed in Colin Powell's office for a long time, talking, taking pictures and everything like that. Came out to be good friends. And He writes me every now and then. So, you know, I think the blacks appreciate it, having a positive character in there like that.
Well, this is interesting to me in light of what we were starting this conversation with in terms of having to contend with the syndicate saying, yes, no, this might be too risky, this will play well. Here we have a military strip, but there's no reference to Iraq. And I wanted to ask you about this kind of balance and this kind of nuance that you threw in there with that. Was this
I try to avoid anything controversial because, you know, if you do something pro-Bush, you know, 50% of your readers are going to get mad, 50% might like it. But I'm after the whole broad spectrum, so I really avoid those things. But to
talk about the broader audience, I mean, Bush's approval rating isn't exactly the best in the world. It's under 30%, so you have 70% of the audience if you were to, say, play around with this kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I try not to get too topical or controversial. That's why I've avoided the war pretty much. I don't mention Iraq very much, very seldom.
Even though this war has lasted longer than World War II? I mean,
yeah.
Doesn't it seem...
There's so many people that are angry about it that I've got to be really careful about how I treat it.
Yeah.
Mostly I just ignore it. There are people say, well, when is Beetle going to go to Iraq? I said, Jesus Christ, I hope never, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to send him there because it's very difficult to deal with. And here I'm just keeping him in basic training. It's the common experience that all soldiers have. If I take him off somewhere and specify into some, you know, particular kind of work, I'll lose a lot of my readers there. They won't be interested. They won't understand it. But everybody understands basic training.
Well,
so that's where I keep him.
I mean, you had this similar situation with Jack Flapp. That's why I sort of presented as well. I mean, that didn't hurt you. In fact, that got Beetle Bailey more attention, you know?
Yeah, but it was a common experience. Anyway, that hasn't hurt me. But, you know, I think if I took him to Iraq, I'd have to show him getting in battle and getting threatened, and I think it would hurt him.
I also wanted to ask you about, we could talk about reader response a little bit. In the 90s, you had General Halftrack going through the sensitivity training.
That was another thing that,
yeah.
You know, to me, it was always acceptable that a boss would chase his secretary around the office. I grew up reading Esquire.
Yeah.
And there was always the boss chasing the secretary around the office or giving her the eye or making a proposition, dictating letters while she's sitting on his lap, you know. It got to be so I thought, well, that was acceptable, and I was doing it. And I was on the television show one time. What's the guy's name? He used to be out in Chicago, and he's retired now. But anyway, he had a television show that they dealt with the current topics. And so he asked me to be on the show, and I thought, oh, that's great. You know, it wasn't until I got on the show I realized that there are a couple of women on there that were going to attack me.
Yeah.
And they said, you've got a terrible strip. And I said, what?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be praised, you know. And they said, well, you draw these big breasts on women and everything like that. How about drawing a big bulge in a man's pants? I said, nobody would cares about that. Anyway, so I began to get a lot of things from women's groups, you know, saying that I was not treating women fairly. And so I took it to heart, and the syndicate wanted me to change it, so I went down and had a big meeting with them, and they thought, get rid of the general.
Yeah.
Get rid of Miss Buxley. And I said, wait a minute, they're favorite characters, you know? And so I did. I went home, and I thought of a new character that would come in, take over from the general. And then my son-in-law said one day, he said, why don't you just send him to sensitivity training? I said, okay. So that's what I did, and it worked out fine.
Yeah. I'm wondering, under what circumstances would you have a shift like this? If it really cuts into the readership, is this really how a change like this happens? Or?
Yeah, they were really after me. You know, there were a lot of women editors around the country who were dropping the strip. And there was one woman that started out in Boston. She dropped my strip, and then she went out to California. She dropped the strip in the newspaper there, and then she went to Florida, dropped the strip there. And I thought, I've got to fight this back in some way. But then I really took to heart and thought, well, women don't like to be viewed that way as a target for verbal or visual abuse, yeah. even though they dress to attract you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of a difficult answer. So anyway, I decided to go ahead and do it, and it's worked out fine.
Yeah. I'm curious if you considered having women soldiers, more of those in this?
Yeah, except that then I have to make them look funny.
Well, you're saying that women soldiers can't be funny?
No, they keep after me all the time. But draw an attractive woman soldier. You know, I get that all the time from women.
Yeah.
And I haven't done it yet, but...
Well, you should consider it. I think it would actually be funny, particularly if you had the attractive woman soldier and then the Sarge, you know, on Beetle.
Yeah, but then how do you be funny with her? You know, you got to have funny-looking characters. So...
I mean, but the thing is if it's really about the look, is that where the funny is, or is it about the concept? Because, I mean, all of your gags often have a twist to it, or a twist in meaning.
It's awfully hard to be funny with a good-looking person, you know. They've got to fall on their pratt, they got to get hit over the head with a bucket, you know, all kinds of things like that.
Yeah.
So, Miss Buxley is my only answer to that, is she's good-looking, and so... They've got a good, anybody that objects, we got a good looking girl in there. But I've changed her whole personality. She's not a target for sexual abuse of any kind. I changed her into a real sweet, innocent young girl who likes Beetle. So she and Beetle now are kind of not lovers, but sort of attracted to each other. And I keep that very innocent. I don't ever have them kissing or anything like that. And a little bit like Little Abner and Daisy May, in that Beetle is not even aware that he's attracted to her.
Yeah, yeah. There's one last question I wanted to ask you, because I know you got to go, but I wanted to ask about the cliffhanger that is in the end of this collection. You have some of the strips initially have this kind of cliffhanger, the little text at the bottom saying, tune in next week or tune in the next day. Yeah. I'm wondering, this made me think to your Saturday evening post one panels. I'm wondering if this was a way for you to adapt to this new idea of running a comic narrative, a comic strip narrative. This was your way of kind of adapting to this particular form of keeping a continuing narrative going.
If you go back and look at that first volume of the strips that Checker Books is publishing, you'll find that underneath that in type says, this strip was never run. We decided not to run that.
Yes.
So I never did those cliffhangers.
When were these done? Were these done during the promotion of Beetle Bailey, or was this
You're testing my memory. That's 58 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is I did the strips. They're all drawn up, and I sent them into the syndicate, and the syndicate said, we don't think you ought to do this. We want one-a-day gags. So I think I just dropped that whole idea. I tried it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And they rejected it.
So for you, the linearity is largely through the characters reappearing and sometimes growing. I mean, how much evolution can characters have within the Beetle Bailey universe?
Only if it's really called for. Nobody gets older. Nobody gets smarter.
Yeah.
They all just stay as dumb as they are.
Yeah. I'm sick of okay. Well, Mort, thanks very much. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Okay, this was fun.
Great, thanks.
Thanks.
All I want is the truth. Just